This is the real weepy and like tragic part of the story beginning, oh my brothers and only friends.
I'm in for four potential getaway drivers. Go.
No!
But I was told that I could listen to the radio at a reasonable volume.
No!
Excuse me, we have a little bit of a hurry.
Hang on, Voltaire.
It's yet another long series of diversions in an attempt to avoid responsibility.
Hey, help! I'm so glad you decided to come back to listen one more time. I assure you the effort expended on your part to obtain it is really worth it. For today, we present you a special edition of This Just In, the podcast. Those of you who regularly check the website at www.the-means.com/thisjustin may have noticed we put up a preemptive call for best and worst of lists from you, the listener, and as always, your responses were too numerous to count. In fact, we had to set up an elite intern squad featuring the brightest minds of the future, meaning second graders, to filter through all your emails, and to be honest, our inboxes have literally exploded from your responses. I'm not kidding, I have battle scars to prove it. As is fitting for all things extinguished, we think it's best we send 2005 off by heckling it out of existence. So without further ado, I'm Chris View, podcasting from the bleak, frigid, and gray nuclear winter of Detroit.
And I'm Tanner Higgin, podcasting from Los Angeles.
And I hope you're as pumped as we are about saying good riddance to 2005. So Tanner, why don't you start the list off with us, what are one of the best things that happened in 2005? What do you have that makes this prestigious list?
Well, when I was sitting back and thinking about 2005, you know, overall I think it was a good year. I can't complain that it was a bad year for me. I wasn't depressed or anything. I had a good overall year. And then I was thinking, you know, okay, what's my favorite films and music and TV of the year? And it was hard as hell to come up with anything. It just seemed like this year had somehow been a supreme dip in the overall trend of cultural developments of the past few centuries, it seemed. But I did see, overall, I didn't go to many movies because they all, obviously, most of them sucked. But I did see one movie that I really enjoyed, and I could say is my favorite movie of the year, which was Broken Flowers by Jim Jarmusch, starring Bill Murray, and this one basically was in an all-out war with movies like Batman Begins,
yes,
and Sin City, and
yes.
I just recently saw The 40-Year-Old Virgin, which was really funny too. But I mean, obviously, comedies are hard to make a best of list. But Broken Flowers basically battled out with Batman Begins and Sin City, two comic book movies, strangely enough, and it won out because after seeing Batman Begins or Broken Flowers, it really made me think. Unlike a lot of movies that I've seen lately, I actually had to reflect on the movie and sort of form an opinion about it because of the way it was stylized and the thematic developments of the film. And I don't want to ruin anything in the film. I actually wrote a post about it, but it's definitely something worth seeing. And I think it's definitely the best use of Bill Murray since Rushmore, I think.
Really?
And I highly, highly recommend it.
So you think his performance in Broken Flowers was better than his performance in now I can't even think of
Lost in Translation.
Yes, Lost in Translation.
Yeah, I think it was just because he used the whole. It was a completely overdone, deadpan sort of acting performance, and somehow it just really, really worked to portray, you know, the middle-aged man who's just kind of just doing things and, you know, not really seemingly enjoying life, and then he takes this journey trying to find out about his life, and I think it. For some reason, Bill Murray was just perfect for that role, and that whole deadpan angle really worked for it.
Well, I'm really happy you actually brought up Sin City and Batman Begins, because from spring this year, when those two films came out, I've said that those two are going to be really hard to top during the course of this year, and it's interesting, too, that both are comic book films. Both take a different approach to comic book films, where you have Sin City that's almost as literal a translation as you can get from comic book to screen, which was, in itself, a profound and hopefully, I think that they're coming out with more Sin Cities.
Yeah, they are. There's one in development already.
So I hope that this becomes a good, you know, one of those positive trends in filmmaking. Whereas Batman Begins took the approach of, certainly it features a comic book character, but it's beyond just being your normal comic book to screen translation. It surpassed my expectations for any comic book to film translation. So I think those two are my top. But if I had to pick another film that really I walked away with something from the film, I saw Me and You and Everyone We Know, and I just watched it the other like last week. I think I saw it on DVD, and I was so impressed by the film because it's quirky, but the characters, like, you do, like, you want to feel just as much as they want to feel, and you take so much from these guys. And it also features one of my favorite actors coming out as of recently, because he's in Deadwood, and I should have pulled this up. His name is
a podcast wouldn't be wouldn't be complete without us looking something up on IMDb.
Exactly. His name is John Hawks, and he's in Deadwood. He plays a merchant in Deadwood, but in this film he plays the father of two. The film starts off with him getting a divorce from his wife, who just so happens to be African American. So he has two interracial children, and you can kind of see how he's at odds with this. Not at odds with it, because it's not that he minds. It's almost as though he knows the rest of the world minds. And but then it's also his, because he's such a quirky character. It's almost as though you don't expect him to ever meet somebody who could be as quirky as him until he meets the character of her name's Christine Jesperson, played by a woman named Miranda July, who actually is the director and the writer of the film. And this girl, she's so goddamn cute. Like, I don't know how to explain her, but there's something about her that's very real, but also over the top. So I guess if I had to say, if I had a movie that just touched me during the year, I would say it was Me and You and Everyone We Know. But the film also features one of the kids is very good at ASCII art, you know, AC art, if I don't know how you call it, but where you use, like, commas and periods and stuff, which I thought was a neat feature considering nobody does that kind of artwork, and if they do, they should kill themselves because it's so pointless. anyway, sorry to offend anyone who might be an aficionado of it. I'm not. So yeah, that was, as far as my best film of the year, I'm going to say that one with Batman Begins and Sin City as close seconds. And you, I'm sorry to stick on movies, but you had brought up how most critics are saying A History of Violence is such a wonderful film. It looks like it's getting pretty much the nod that it's either the best film or at least in the top three. And I have to say I don't agree with that. I can give you multiple reasons, but one of them, which I explained to you earlier, was the fact that William Hurt, who's one of the greatest actors of our time, basically failed me. He's not good in the film. He plays this this Italian-type mafia guy who he just doesn't pull it off. William Hurt is not that character, and so that sucked. And then there's just a lot of flaws in the film. It was kind of painstaking to watch in parts. And there's this really awkward sex scene in the film, and that made me feel uncomfortable. I actually turned to the person I was with, and we both had a good chuckle because the sex scene was just so weird. And we could do nothing but laugh at it. So.
I mean, wouldn't you say overall that there was something about this year that just... I mean, there's been a lot of talk about how the movie business has been, you know, they've been losing money for a few years now, and it just seems that really this year the quality of films, and it seemed to take a huge dip this year. I mean, there wasn't much that made me want to go out, you know, and go to the movies. It's very little.
For me, like, the benchmark for a good year in film has been for the past six, almost going on 7 years, has been 1999, I think, was the best year for film in the last decade. And so for any year has to compete with how I felt during 1999, when there was just, from August through December, it was nonstop every weekend. There was one film in the theater I had to go see. Whereas this year, you know, King Kong's at the theater, Brokeback Mountain's at the theater. You know, then there's the Johnny Cash movie, and I can say I liked the Johnny Cash movie, but it was nothing, really. I mean, it's not a best film of the year. And so, and even now, like, I could go see King Kong today. I've got the time. And it's not like it was in 99, where, like I said, every weekend I felt as though it was my duty as the movie-going public to support a certain film in the theater. So that's based on that benchmark alone, this year failed me miserably.
Shane actually mentioned in his, he sent us an email about his top things, which we'll be referencing throughout. But the one thing he mentioned that I was also agreed with was, you know, Star Wars Revenge of the Sith was really like a benchmark of this year, and the release of that movie sort of was the final nail in the coffin of my childhood. And I think it kind of sums up the movies of this year in that, you know, it was just there. It wasn't what it should have been, you know. Yeah. Revenge of the Sith was supposed to be, you know, before these prequels were released, was supposed to be just this monumental movie. I mean, it was supposed to be just
dark and brooding.
Yeah, it was just going to define an entire generation's conceptualization of one of the best, you know, modern myths and modern stories. And really, what it turned out to be is a representation of the decline of movies in the past few years, where they're just, you know, they're not very creative, they're not very interesting, and Revenge of the Sith represents that. I mean, there was a lot of hype about it, but in all reality, it was a very mediocre movie, and it took the whole series out in a very small, low whimper, and yeah. I think that kind of sums up the year. It was just a whimper. There was nothing really that got you excited about movies, and God, I hope it changes, but I don't really see it changing.
So I think we can say a good riddance to film of 2005, and hopefully 06 proves to be slightly better. Yeah. I mean, we need to have something happen for me to feel as though I'm back in the loop with film, because I feel very much ostracized from it. You know, I had a story which is off the, you know, topic of film, but because this best of and worst of, it doesn't really have a theme, it's just what's worst of the year. And so this comes, I guess, under the heading, though, of technology news, but it's something so innovative that I couldn't help but not talk about this, because I think it's the coolest thing that happened all year during 2005. And that, and I got this off of Wired.com, because I'm obviously out of the loop when it comes to tech news and things like that, but this is from Wired.com, but we as Earthlings, finally got our first neurocybernaut, which was quadriplegic Matt Nagel. He was paralyzed, I think, he was paralyzed, I'm not sure what the extent was, but they implanted into his brain, they put a chip in his brain, which allowed him to control an artificial hand by brain power alone. And for this to happen, I don't know if you've got to be on the same page as me, Tanner. Like, the ramifications of this are so... This is straight out of an Aldous Huxley novel. This is awesome. You know, I'm
yeah,
so
is
pumped
awesome.
To see this happen. But the guy, basically, I'll just read this off of what Wired.com says, but it says, Nagel's neuro-cybernetic interface allows him to, just by thinking, he's able to move his paralyzed hand, but it also allows him to control the lights, the TV, and the computer in his home. So I just think that's like the coolest thing of all time.
But
so.
here's my opinion on the thing. What immediately needs to happen is this technology needs to be brought out from the realm of the handicapped or helping invalids or anything like that, and it needs to be brought in the realm of robot jocks. Can we please stop, you know, helping out the handicapped or the mentally disabled or, you know, the paralyzed, and start getting robot jocks?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, anyone whose dad took him to that film in, like, what was it, 88, you know, you guys know what we're talking about. What you were saying, you also touched it. I want it to be brought not just because I understand their plight as best I can, but it, you know what? I want that chip in my head.
Yeah.
I want to be able to control, like, I want to be able to control my TV just using my mind. And I want to be able to turn my computer on and off just with my mind. You know what I'm saying? Like, these are innovations that go beyond the scope of just, you know, for paraplegics. This goes into the realm of, like, do we want to be badasses or no? I'm just going to lay it out right now. Do we want to or no? And if we do, which I think everyone's answer is yes, please, let's all become neurocybernauts.
Yeah, and let's implant these chips in other human beings and then have other human beings control those human beings that are chipped. Now that would be cool. You could turn people into puppets.
That was basically my story. That to me, that was like the coolest scientific achievement of the year, though.
And I compiled my worst of list of music this year, because not only could I had trouble finding my favorite film of the year, but I really didn't have a favorite album of the year, which is a rarity. I can't even remember the last year that I didn't have it. There wasn't an album that completely stuck out to me as the best. But there was definitely some albums that stuck out to me as the worst, or songs rather. And I think everyone, like, when I considered this list, I looked at this list and I was just thinking, I was like, every one of our listeners will probably agree that these are the four worst songs released this year. And the first one is, see, I don't even know the names of these songs, but I'll just announce them and everyone will know them regardless, is that Gwen Stefani song, or the Hollerback Girl.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
God, that song is terrible.
Yeah, it doesn't even have, like, I think what people were attracted to, because, again, most people are automatons, what they were attracted to was that simple beat that just went that do-tch-do-tch-do-tch, you know, and it wasn't, anyone who enjoys music and the talent that's behind it, you realized quickly that that was a very talentless song.
Yes,
I think, unfortunately, most people were duped by it.
Somehow she repackaged cheerleader music and made it so everyone liked it. It was like a rebirth of that Mickey song, almost.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, and number two is R. Kelly's Trapped in the Closet. His epic, like, rap R&B play that made no sense and was absolutely uncreative and uninteresting. And
yeah.
And then
Before you go, move on past that, I just want to say I believe he's been commissioned to write an entire, like, sequel to the In the Closet series. So just I want everyone to prepare themselves for more of the same thing, because if you notice, every song in the Closet series had the same melody and everything. It was like, I'm trapped in the closet, now I'm going to the bedroom, I got my gun out, you know, that's everything. That's like every song did the same thing. So I think we're gonna be, I'm prepped for more of it, though, quite frankly. I don't know why that's on your worst of.
Well,
that, for me, that was,
well, I hope,
highlights of my year.
I hope people are listening to it like I listen to it and, you know, find it humorous, because R. Kelly, I'm sure, takes himself completely serious. Like, he probably believes he's like the rat or the R&B, like Arthur Miller or something, writing Death of a Salesman. You know? But I hope everyone's listening to it and just laughing at it and laughing at the self-destruction of his career. But I think what worries me is that people actually think it might be an intelligent, you know, that he's doing something really groundbreaking.
Yeah, but you know what? The other thing that really ostracized me from that song, aside from the style of music it's in the first place, was the fact that I had no pity for the character in the closet. So that alone is a flaw within the writing itself. You know, I want to be involved in that character, and the guy was kind of a douche. So I kind of wanted him to get shot by the husband who comes home to see him wife.
Well, the whole thing is none of the characters are any. There's no characterization. There's no interesting plot. It's as if when you read like a third grader's story, you know, when you have to write a narrative or something, you write a short fiction. It's like, okay, there's this guy with this sword. He goes to this castle. There's a dragon in there. Stabs that dragon, and then a guy rides along on a dirt bike, and that's essentially what R. Kelly's Trapped in the Closet. It's just him sitting there coming up with stuff to the same melody over and over and over again. Okay, now the next one is the Yin Yang Twins. I'm not sure what this song was called, but it was like a whisper song. Do you know what I'm talking about? But they did the whole song in a whisper.
I do and I don't, because I'm vaguely recall. I think I repressed most of these memories, so in a way, I think I do. If you can pull it up, do you have it?
Yeah, and the whole the main lyric of the song is wait till you see my dick, but it's bleeped out, so it's like wait till you see my something like that. Let me see if I can. I mean, it's so bad. Yeah, but I think it, like, people call it the whisper song or something like that. I don't even know if they have it on iTunes, actually.
Well, in the meantime, I would like to bring up, like, maybe three, I think I might have three albums that were, or at least three artists whose music was amazing this year, which the first one you're going to be in complete concurrence with, I believe, but Jens Lehmann came out with Oh, You're So Silent, Jens, and it was critically acclaimed.
That was a good album.
Yeah, I mean, it's a solid album, and it's something that you don't catch on idiot. You know, you just have to look for good reviews, I mean, or look for reviews, and you'll see that this thing's gotten a lot of really good reviews. Entertainment Weekly said that he peppers his dour dedication with a deadpan Morrissey-esque wit. I think that's pretty accurate. And then the other band is one that we feature on this podcast, but the Go Team. They came out with some really unique stuff, and they've had a really good year. I know that Playboy has featured them as one of their top artists of the year. So yeah, they have a
sound unlike anybody else. I think that nothing's quite been done like what they're doing.
Yeah. On the other hand, for my worst, one of my worst albums, and I haven't heard it, but I'm just gonna say it because I can. All the Right Reasons by Nickelback. Typically, anything released by them, I know is gonna be shit. But the critics are only confirming it.
There needs to be no vote. They release an album, it's automatically number one. It's just like if Creed releases an album, it's automatically the worst album of the year.
The New York Times said it best when they said, "For hard rock ridiculousness, Nickelback is tough to beat." Rolling Stone said, "All the Right Reasons is so depressing, you're almost glad Kurt's not around to hear it." Oh, this is wonderful. So anyway, those are some of my, those are a few of my musical things. Do you have any more?
Yeah, there's one, see, and you know what, the Yin Yang Twins song isn't on iTunes. It's almost as if Apple and Steve Jobs have said, we are not allowing this song on iTunes. Even if it can make us money, it will not go on there. But I'm sure people out there know what song I'm talking about. But,
yeah,
I mean, the universal worst song of the year, and Shane definitely seems to agree with this, as he put it in a number of his different topics, was My Humps. It became a cultural anthem of just the idiocy of the music industry nowadays. And I think
we have a sample of that.
Oh, of course. It was number one on iTunes forever. And I mean, me and you first got introduced to it through Second Life's, and we'd go to these clubs in the MMORPG Second Life, and everyone would play this song in every club, and it seemed.
I have to admit, though, my character loved it.
Yeah, because it seemed to fit so well in a video game, because it isn't quite a real song, but somehow everyone loved it. And
yeah.
Okay, of course, if you haven't heard it, here it is.
Oh, great.
Check it out. I drive these brothers crazy. I do it on the daily. They treat me really nicely. They buy me all these ices. Dolce and Gabbana. Fendi.
So there it is. I'm sure no one has not heard that. I mean, that song defined this year and sort of sums up the year.
Really, I'm just reading the lyrics, and when you see my hump times six, meaning that they say my hump six times, like, come on.
The worst part is when the guy comes in and he's like, mix your milk with my Cocoa Puffs. Milky, milky Cocoa Puffs.
Yeah. Milky, milky rye. It's a ridiculous song.
People bought that. They actually bought, they drive around in their cars and they listen to that.
Did you notice how many lyrics there are to this song, though? I mean, this is like a Shakespearean, you know, this is a soliloquy here. It's ridiculous how much there is. Anyway, all right, well, does that do it for at least music?
Yeah, and I think everyone can agree those are the universal worst songs of 2005.
As I explained to you before we started recording, one specific group of people, I think, most epitomizes all that went wrong with the world in 2005, yet, simultaneously, it makes my best of list, too. So, I'm just gonna go into it and say that my worst thing of this year is George Bush and his handling of the country. My best thing of this year is George Bush and just how badly he's failed. 'Cause I love that he's failed, because it's finally giving me some vindication for, you know, when we lost in 2004, it was like probably the worst experience of my life, because I realized at that point my stake in the country was gone. But now that we're seeing approval ratings finally dictate to Bush, you know, that he's not the super badass he thought he was.
Yeah, they dipped to, what, 34%?
At one point. And so finally, like, I feel as though I'm getting my just desserts now. So if we want to go chronologically, we can start the year off. Bush gets inaugurated in 2005, and right away, because he's, you know, he doesn't have to worry about re-election anymore, right away he begins campaigning for probably the dumbest idea ever, which was the privatization of Social Security. and fails miserably. Why does it fail? Because nobody wants to gamble their futures away, you dildo.
Yeah, all right, it makes no sense. Like, let's all go to Vegas on our social... Let's all go to Vegas on our retirement.
Yeah, we're going to just bet it all on 26 Black and see what happens. You know, seriously, it was a harebrained idea. He thought he could do it, though, because he was riding the high. You know, when the country... even though it was such a close election, once inauguration time came around in January, if I recall correctly, most people were just kind of like, all right, well, what if it even happened, and this is our guy now, and so we got to stick with him, blah, blah, blah. So his ratings, I don't think, were too bad at the time, or at least the consensus was he hadn't messed up royally just yet. And then he starts campaigning for this, and he just went to failed venue after failed venue. You know, he would try to stack the deck in his favor and put, you know, plant people in the audience. But it just didn't work. Your average American, while sometimes being a little aloof, this time they caught on to his gimmick, and they realized that it wasn't what was best for them. It was what was best for H&R Block and these other people, you know, these big businesses. It was much better for them because they were going to, you know, any investment company, you know, Merrill Lynch and them, they were all standing to gain huge. Whereas your average blue-collar worker like my mom and dad were going to lose their asses off because they don't know. You know, I mean, they might do all right because they're a little savvy with things like this, but most people have no clue how best to invest their cash. I can just imagine how bad off the nation would be 20 years from now when we have these poor, destitute, you know, 78-year-old people who are collecting $200 in Social Security and the rest was gambled away in their panhandling outside of baseball games. We would have, it would be pandemonium.
Yeah, it's almost like a surreptitious sort of Enron sort of, you know, scandal.
Yeah.
Where, I mean, these CEOs and the corporate heads and the big business and all that, they're making out. They're going to do fine, regardless.
Yeah.
They're going to always do fine. But then they also get this little extra money in their pocket by just tricking everybody into gambling their retirement into their pockets. It's just,
Yeah. Oh,
it was so shady, and thank God it didn't go through.
And then the next thing, this might be going a little out of order because I'm not sure exactly when this happened, but one of the other key things in this administration was the discovery that they had, especially during the election, they had given money to reporters to write favorably on like the health care or whatever. Do you remember that story? This is off
yeah.
the top of my head, but I don't remember when it occurred this year, but it was a very shady thing. They had given some reporter like hundreds of thousands of dollars or whatever just to report favorably on Bush's ideas, and which pretty much goes against the concepts of this country and democracy in general. But hey, you know what? He's the prez, so what can we do? You know, that happened, and that was BS. And then speaking of the news, though, probably the biggest news story of the year, and this is on the worst of because this is so tragic that this even happened, but what was it, sometime around May-ish, I think, the whole Terri Schiavo incident happened, which is one of the darkest spots in 2005, if not the worst, because it was at that moment where I think the American public, this is like when the spiral, you know, the downward spiral for the Republicans began. Because at that point, I'm a Christian, which is the voting base for the Republican Party right now. But at the same time, they were like, but I don't want this to ever have to happen to me. And they realized, it was stunning to me that people actually caught this. But, you know, Congress is out of session at the time. And miraculously, votes are coming in to pass this Terri Schiavo bill. And it's like, you guys can't get shit done during the course of the regular year. But the minute that it looks like you need to mobilize so that you can get pander to vote the voting public, the minute that looks like that, you know, it's going to work in your favor, you come flying in from Wyoming just so that you can be like, I'm voting for this Terri Schiavo bill. And meanwhile, you can't even make a goddamn decision regarding Iraq or adequate aid for the poor or welfare policies or anything. These people basically showed us that just how self-centered they are. By mobilizing to this issue. So it was just wonderful for me to see on the level that I got to see Republicans look like douchebags.
The
level
the,
where, you know, a gentleman, you know, the... Oh, go ahead.
The Terri Schiavo thing is really disappointing, too, because, I mean, everyone just began to hate Terri Schiavo just because of
yeah.
her saturation in the media. And it's so unfortunate that it turned out that way, that, you know, she became this real person became sort of this battleground over these, you know, religious and political issues, and she sort of became like the wishbone between the two sides, and she and her family and everyone involved with her really was people who lost out. It's sad that a person got put in the middle of all that. It's almost like the Ilian Gonzalez thing.
Yeah, and her, you know, her poor husband, I felt really bad for him because he, you know, this guy was, his name was run through the muck, and it was run through the muck by people who didn't even understand his situation. And in fact, I recall, I want to say it was Tom DeLay, but I might be wrong, one of those guys from Texas, the one of the senators who was voting, you know, so adamant against the feeding tube and whatnot, and when it turned out that in the past his family had to do something similar with a family member, and it's like, what a hypocrite, you know? It's quite obvious he was just doing it to pander to his voting base. And so very much the Republican Party was a bunch of douchebags in that situation.
Mm-hmm.
So there was that, and then what else happened? Let me think. Cause
well, there's a little hurricane.
Summertime with the that happened. That was bullshit. You know what I was going to say? Actually, there was elections in Iraq, which is a good thing to have. But then let's not forget that over the course of the summer, how many of our soldiers died during the war? And you know, let us not have elections in Iraq cloud the fact that, you know, these are costly. This is a costly endeavor, and I believe that. That his, even though there were these elections, that his ratings were still slipping at that time, and then only to be destroyed when Hurricane Katrina came around, which we've discussed in earlier podcasts. But that basically showed us that all the problems that we think are remedied in this country because we have Homeland Security and because we've got Bush on our side, it was very much clear at that point that they hadn't been working for us. They were asleep on the job this whole time. I mean, granted, Bush, you know, he deserved all the vacations he's taken in the past. You know, he's taken one full year worth of vacation in the 6 years he's been president. That's phenomenal to me. But the fact is like,
you got to work hard at that.
But you know, the guy's got a lot on his plate. You got to understand, poor President Bush, man. You know, he's a big thinker. Okay, he's got big ideas, big goals, big concepts, and you know, he needs to relax sometimes too. And but he was relaxing at the wrong moment. I think he's probably kicking himself in the teeth for this, because he was too busy in Crawford. He had to still spend that extra 5 days. He was still too tired to take a walk around the battered areas of Louisiana. So instead, he did a flyby. He flew over, waved to the people below, said, "Wow, this does look like shit." Then he went to I can't even think of the name, Biloxi or some place that was destroyed by the hurricane, but it wasn't New Orleans, man. It was just a small town, you know, and he's just walking through, you know, with his that bullshit, like, I'm a badass strut going through town, and he looked like a dildo, too, right there. So, Katrina was really a disaster, and what else was there?
Well, you know what's weird about Katrina is the fact that there was a huge earthquake in like, Pakistan, Afghanistan, and India that killed 87,000 people and left 3 million homeless. And I would guarantee that most people have no idea that that even occurred.
Yeah, you know? That's sad.
It's like,
I think that's testament to the news media, too. Obviously, the most important thing is what happens in our own backyard. But
yeah, it's who cares attitude.
Yeah, I mean, because last year, you know, that tsunami was a bad thing, but it was pretty much a bad thing only because there's an American tourist there, and the news wasn't really that exciting this time last year, so it was perfect timing. The news media latched onto it. There was some really wonderful reporting that went on during Katrina, too, that deserves a worst of for the year, because it was pretty much the capitalization of the media on the on the death of human beings. You know, when you've got Richard Simmons walking through the wake of Katrina wearing his leotard, I think that there's certainly something wrong with doing an expose on that. You know,
I'm sick of seeing aftermath. That's all this coverage is. I can't believe people are so interested in aftermath and misery. I want to see the action. I want to see the hurricane hitting. I want to see Richard Simmons there as the hurricane is hitting. And I want to see a metal pipe go through his head or something like that. Now I would watch that. I didn't watch any of the aftermath coverage because I don't really care. I want to see action, you know.
You know what's sad, though, on a more serious note, is I work for the Army, so we do deployments, and I had volunteered to be deployed, but it just didn't work out in my favor. to be able to go down and be deployed. But I know some people who were deployed to do some logistical type help down there, and they just got back just before Christmas, and they basically what they're saying is that it's still a shithole down there. There's still a lot left to be done, and that it's, you know, more than likely they'll have the French Quarter up in these places where, you know, rich white people are going to bring their cash to. But it's really sad to say that the other areas of town, the major aftermath story should be that our government is still, at this moment, failing these people.
Yeah.
So I wish there was some more that I could do, but unfortunately there isn't.
It's kind of bizarre when you think of, when you think past the year, and really the only things you can think about are the major, you know, tragedies, like the London bombings, or
yeah.
Terry Schiavo, or Hurricane Katrina, or the earthquake in, you know, Pakistan, Afghanistan, India, or the Pope's death. And
yeah.
I think I began thinking about it as like, because I just read this book called The Sense of an Ending by Frank Kermode, where he says we're constantly trying to apply apocalyptic narratives to whatever time we're in,
oh, yeah.
trying to confirm that we're, you know, the civilization that's going to experience apocalypse, that we're the time period that's going to experience apocalypse.
This has been happening since, like, if you recall, the year 1000 was a millennium, and people were so worried back in the year 1000 that the world was going to be done for. And back in the 19th century, people were... I mean, you can read the transcripts of these zealots who were up on stages telling people the end is nigh, you know, repent, repent, repent. It's the story of every age. We're not special people, all right? These things just happen. We're not special. But the fact is, like, everyone wants to make us feel more significant than we are, and sadly, we're just a blip on the radar.
Yeah, and the media coverage of this year, I think, really, I mean, they focus on certain things, and then those things become the defining events of the year. And if you really look over the year, the defining events of this year, once again, are apocalyptic-type things. And I'm sure there's really
yeah.
great things going on, but it's so hard to really find out about, you know, like that scientific advancement or something
yeah.
along those lines, you know.
Well, you know, and I'm recalling, I believe it was Pat Robertson. He's probably my favorite guy on the entire planet. Pat Robertson, I remember him saying something to the effect of, you know, all these hurricanes that are hitting are because... and this is, you know, this isn't an exact quote, but basically his gist was, it was because of all the gays that live, you know, in New Orleans, and it's all the gays that are hanging out in Miami, Florida, are coming, and, you know, that this is just the beginning, and, meanwhile, if you recall when, like, what was it, Hurricane Andrew, I think in 94 that hit, and even the ones that happened before that, anytime there's a natural disaster, people want to explain it with, you know, well, how do you explain the fact that we're having more hurricanes this season than any other season? Well, it's quite simple. The world's climate is changing, and things are getting messed up because of it. It's not a hard concept, but people want to ascribe, what they want to do is they want to put some sort of supernatural thing on top of it, because that helps explain it better, because, of course, why trust science? I mean, the only thing that they've ever done is put a goddamn brain chip in a guy so he can move things with his mind, okay? Sorry, you know, science isn't doing anything wondrous and you know, ridiculously capable, so anyway, that's just me getting pissed over it. But the fact is that, you know, these people want something significant to happen in their lives, and I'm sad to say nothing significant is happening, people.
I think there was one great news story this year, though, that really, you know, sort of makes me happy. I'm sure it makes a ton of other people happy, and it's, I guess, the bright light at the end of the tunnel, and that's really Tom Cruise and Katie Holmes getting together.
Yes.
That was just, I think that was wonderful, and I'm so glad that so much attention has been given to that story, because it really, it makes my life better. I know that much.
I think Tom Cruise's crowning achievement during this whole year was the way that he challenged Matt Lauer in regards to psychology and the ills of psychology, because everybody knows, listen, if you've got your degree in psychology, then you went for bullshit reasons, man, because it's a pseudoscience. Scientologists know this, and we should know better, too, okay? We can't continue on this path of self-destruction where we think that there are certain medicines that can treat people or ways to evaluate the brain. Scientology is the way, okay? And Tom Cruise, thankfully, he fired his first... says they're running the show, because he's able to tell us all of the perils of our ways, and I think if Tom Cruise were to try to usurp power on a worldly scale, I would vote for it.
Yeah,
what about you?
He seems like he's really got it together. He's not creepy at all, you know?
No, not at all.
That
guy splashed water in his face, and then he... All right, I'm not going to be facetious anymore. When that guy splashed water in his face, that was awesome. And then, like, Tom Cruise, they show the slow-mo, and there's that instant where he's laughing about it, and then he does a complete 180, and it's like, holy shit, Tom Cruise just got pissed. And then he's like, why would you do something like that? Why would you do that to me? Did you think that was funny? And the guy with the water's like, I don't know. And then he got lectured by Tom Cruise. It was great. One of the best moments of the year, by far.
Well, somebody on, I think it was on one of those VH1 shows or whatever, had a surprisingly, and, you know, surprising because usually the comments they make on those shows are really asinine, but one person had a really surprising insight into that moment, in that when the guy splashes water on his face, Tom Cruise is like, you're a jerk. You're a jerk. And it's as if he being Tom Cruise, had never seen a jerk before, and that this was the first time anyone had ever been mean to Tom Cruise. And that seeing him, it's as if, you know, that moment when you're two or three and somebody does something mean to you, and you're like, wow, this guy's just an asshole. It's like Tom Cruise finally gets that moment. He's like, you know, 40 years old. He finally realizes there's jerks in the world. It's so That's great so to awesome. See it on TV.
What else happened this year? Well, finishing up the Bush thing really quick, we ended off the year with like the best thing to cap things off with, which was we found out that our president is spying on us. So that's great news, because to confirm all my Orwellian suspicions, you know, finally it's all come to fruition. You know, he's finally got, and sadly the only reason why Congress is going to act against it is because they're sad they don't have that kind of power. So mm-hmm. we're really living in dark times, man. I hate to say it.
Well, there's also, you're not bringing up the whole Valerie Plame CIA outing, which that was revealed that they had a heavy involvement in those activities, in the outing of a CIA agent to maliciously to get back at an ambassador who was speaking out against, you know, their policies on Iraq. Which, so yeah, there's mounds and mounds of evidence.
The new scandal now, the Jack Abramoff crap, which should hopefully get indictments all around the board for these douchebag Republicans like Tom DeLay, and finally put people in the place where they need to be, which is prison for half of these politicians. But you know what I want to bring up? Because this is something I discovered near the end of the year. This could be one of the highlights of the year for me, because it gives me faith in politics, finally. If you go to Barack Obama's website for, you know, he's a senator for Illinois, wonderful human being who's a little bit honest, and this was the coolest thing, though. He's actually got a podcast, and I highly recommend people listening to it, because it's cool. Sometimes it's just him talking about like what he did for Thanksgiving, and that's fine though, because you get insight into like a regular dude who's working for his constituents, and then he's also got like one of the podcasts is him on what's that guy's name? The Al Franken Show. It's also a clip of him on the Senate floor talking about the recent things with. I can't think of the guy's name, but that guy, that one Marine Corps guy who's like a really good senator from like Virginia or Pennsylvania or whatever, who spoke out against the war, and it was Obama's response to that, which was really well thought out. And then it's also just him talking about situations within the state of Illinois, but the country as a whole too. And he's one of those, he's almost like a Bobby Kennedy figure to me, like where he's actually giving a shit about the poor. So I highly recommend people just listen to it. I mean, he's not my senator, but at the same time, he is everybody's senator. He's part of a legislative body that's, you know, on a national level. So I recommend people go check that out.
Yeah, we should probably end the show since we're in the 47th minute.
Oh, crap. Well, if anyone has any other crap that they want to add, they think was good or bad this year, feel free to send it to us, and maybe next week we can just conclude with some of their stuff and then talk about whatever we have to talk about.
Yep, we'll be back next week. See you then.
Yep. Bye.
Thank you for listening to This Just In, recorded on Sunday, January 8th, 2006, and distributed on Monday, January 9th, 2006. For more information, please visit www.the-means.com. Also, if you're interested in contributing writing, art, or photography to Issue 2 of the Means Literary Journal, due out in late spring, please visit that website at www.the-means.com/journal and click on the Contribute link on the right side of the page for submission guidelines.